Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you all to the What to Expect During Your Stage 1 Audit webinar. My name is Joseph Krolikowski. I am the QMS Program Manager for Perry Johnson Registrars. Now, our presentation today is going to cover the topic of Stage 1 audits from a couple of different perspectives. We're going to dig into why there is a two-stage process to begin with. We're going to walk you through the steps that lead up to a Stage 1 audit, the quote phase, and some other things that happen prior to the Stage 1. I'll walk you through the Stage 1 audit process, kind of front to back, give you a sense of what happens when. I want to highlight for all of you some things that can prevent continuance to a Stage 2, and what you should do in terms of responding to any recommendations so that you can make sure you are as ready as you can possibly be for that Stage 2 audit. And then we will conclude with your questions. Now, in terms of why a two-stage audit process is used, the easiest explanation is that PJR is compelled to do a two-stage certification process. This comes from a standard called ISO 17021. There is a clause in that standard that states the following: the initial certification audit of a management system shall be conducted in two stages, stage one and stage two. Now, many years ago, certification audits could be done in a single step. They were referred to as registration audits back then. And the problem with that approach in some cases was that if a company said we're ready and time was set aside, say 4 days, 3 days, auditor shows up, and by lunch on the first day, it is painfully apparent that the auditee is nowhere close to being ready for a certification assessment. That was the logic behind the requirement. And so the idea is to look at some very basic items, some very top level items. And if those items are in place, generally it's going to mean that the rest of the system can be assured that it's reliably in place, and therefore the organization can proceed to the full audit. Now, obviously, before we can conduct a Stage 1 audit at your facility, you must be a PJR contracted client. Now, we have an application document. We actually have a series of application documents, all with the F1 prefix. And the F1 series of documents, they are complex. Most of them are a minimum of 3 pages. But they're complex because we want to gather a variety of information. We want to make sure that, first of all, that we are giving you the most competitive quotation we possibly can, and also that we are identifying any logistical issues, readiness issues, things that we can then work on before we are at the point of the Stage 1 assessment. Now, in terms of audit time, we get this question a lot. Where do you get X number of days? Why do I have this number of days for a Stage 2 or what have you? Well, the starting point for audit day determination is from the International Accreditation Form. You can kind of think of the IAF as the top of the food chain in the certification world. And their document, mandatory document, or MD5, is the starting point. There's actually a table within that document, and we are required to follow that table in terms of assigning audit time. And We can work with that audit time to a point. There's ways to reduce time. In some circumstances, we actually have to add time depending on what's going on at your organization. So, we always like to mention to prospective clients that if you get a quotation from PJR and the stage two audit is being shown as 4 days, and you get a competitive quote and it shows stage two audit day and a half, that's a concern. That's a red flag because potentially the calculation method that was used is inappropriate. And you might be looking at a circumstance where time is going to get added in some other way, shape, or form. But be aware of that. Now, once you are under contract, you will be assigned to an audit program coordinator. You'll probably come to know this person as your scheduler. And the scheduler is intended to be your primary point of contact here at Perry Johnson. Now, you will potentially from time to time hear from executive committee members, management team members like myself, but your primary point of contact is always going to be your scheduler. So, if you have a question, if you have something that needs clarification, you can always email the scheduler or call the scheduler. And if they can't help you, they'll know who can. They'll know who can assist and try to answer your questions. Now, obviously, the scheduler's primary function is to assign an auditor for your audit. Now, pre-COVID, obviously, a big emphasis was can we put someone with you that is within your area? We get this a lot. Can I have a local auditor? Obviously, there's a lot of interest in saving and travel expense and so forth. We do work with that as best we are able in normal times. Understand, however, that we need to make sure that the auditor is competent in your technical area. So if you work in a very specialized industry, we may only have a few auditors that are skilled in that industry that are going to be available to perform a stage one or stage two assessment. Now, prior to the stage one, you're also going to be sent a an attestation document. This is from the F108 series of documents. And let's dig into this a little bit more and tell you what that's all about. Now, the F108 series of documents, it's a checklist. And essentially, what it is you go down the list of what it lists, and it basically says, okay, do you have these items? Do you have a scope defined? Have you determined what your processes are? Have you done an internal audit? Have you conducted a management review? And so forth. And essentially, when you fill the F108 out, you are affirming to PJR, yes, we have these items, we have all of these items, and we are ready for our stage one assessment. This is actually something that PJR is required to do in advance of a stage one under the accreditation body mandates. Now, there is one other item that's on the F108, or I should say that is referenced on the F108. And that's PJR Form F191. So let's dig into that a little bit. It's another PJR document. Okay. Now, the F191, it remains, I think, a point of confusion for some of our clients. It's not the most intuitive document. What it's intended to do is to help ensure that whatever processes you've established for your quality management system, that these represent a fulfillment of all the clauses of the applicable standard. The intent is that you're going to document what your processes are and assign the clause numbers. So let's look at an example of how this might take place. So let's say that this is your interaction of processes. Now you'll note in the lower left-hand corner, there are six named processes here. So those six processes are sales order entry, purchasing, production, shipping, quality, and support. So we know that we have six processes. So let's organize these now on the F-191 itself. Okay. So again, we know we have six processes here, and we've now identified what clauses are fulfilled by these processes. Now, some of these items, like for example, sales order entry, there's only three clauses in play, 7.5, 8.1, and 8.2. Support, as you can see, covers all of the clauses. And I'm sure you're also noticing that clause 8.3 has no processes associated with it. We would take that, of course, to mean that this is an organization that is not responsible for design. So this grid, this F-191, again, the intent is that this is a way for you to demonstrate to us and assure us that you've implemented all the processes you need to make sure that the requirements of the standard are being upheld. That's the intent here. That's the big picture here. Okay, so once all the pre-information is gathered and everything is in place, now it's time for the audit. Now, obviously, in normal times, stage one audits are conducted on site. We are doing virtual stage one audits right now. We are also doing what is referred to as off-site stage one audits. Now, off-site and virtual audits are not the same thing. With an off-site audit, what happens is you send all of your documentation kind of en masse to the auditor. The auditor kind of pieces through it. Now, that is permitted for certain types of ISO 9001 management systems, but understand that in that arrangement, typically you're going to be looking at more overall audit time based on the fact that offsite audit time does not count towards the IAF MD5 mandated onsite audit time. Now, before your auditor arrives, you should expect to hear from your auditor a couple of days in advance of the audit, and you should also expect to receive an audit plan. Now, it is important that you confirm that the information on the audit plan is correct and let your auditor know if it isn't. That means we need to fix something in our system if there are details in that audit plan that are inconsistent with what was contracted. Now, as I said, we do also offer a virtual stage one audit option, and if you are going to be going through a stage one in the next few months, definitely feel free to ask your scheduler about the virtual option. Now, the stage one audit, like all audits, begins with an opening meeting. This is a great chance for you to confirm any last minute changes and to make sure that your auditor is aware of any critical information. If you're going to be having visitors during the stage one, if you're going to have key people that are going to be unavailable at certain points of time, all good information to share during the opening meeting. And from there, the audit will proceed according to the plan. Now, our stage one audits, we have designated workbooks for the stage one audit process. And just about everything that is looked at within a stage one audit is documentation based. We look over your scope statement, your internal audit records, your management review records, and so forth. And each of these items results in one of two possible outcomes. Either the item that was seen is going to be judged as conforms, or the item that was seen is going to be judged as concern. Now, a concern is going to be anything that represents a disconnect between what you've implemented and the requirement from the standard. And we'll be covering what some of the more critical concerns are, a little bit later in the presentation. Now, be aware, there are no nonconformances in a stage one assessment, at least none that are officially documented. Now, once the auditor has completed the review of the materials, typically they're going to take a little bit of time to prepare the audit report. Now, as I mentioned, there are no nonconformances in a Stage 1 audit, but you will get a copy of the audit report. And there'll be a closing meeting as well, where the auditor is going to discuss what the results of the Stage 1 audit are. Now, there are three possible outcomes for the Stage 1 audit. The outcome might be recommend for continuance to Stage 2 with no concerns, recommend for continuance to Stage 2 with some minor concerns, or in the case of some significant concerns, a repeating of the Stage 1 audit. Now, you will be asked to sign off on a copy of the Stage 1 results, and you'll be given a copy of the completed report. Now, it is possible in normal times, if the auditor has to travel or whatnot, it may be a few additional days before you get the finalized report, but you'll definitely have your closing meeting, and the auditor will share the recommendation with you. So if it's been a few days since your Stage 1 audit and you've not gotten the completed report, definitely reach out to your auditor, reach out to PJR, and let us know about it. Now, as I mentioned, there are no nonconformances in a Stage 1 audit, but there are concerns. And these fall into one of two possible pools. There are concerns that can prevent continuance to Stage 2, and there are concerns that just reflect things that you should probably take a look at prior to Stage 2, but they're not showstoppers. One item that can prevent continuance to Stage 2 is if you've not done an effective job in defining your processes. Identifying processes and determining sequence and interaction is one of the core activities of a quality management system. And if it hasn't been done properly, it raises all kinds of red flags on how much of a grip you have on the rest of the requirements. So this is going to be rooted in the interaction of processes documents. So for example, if we are given an interaction of processes document that represents a PDCA diagram from the standard, or if it is a canned item that you got from a consultant and it bears no resemblance to your processes, these are red flags. These are concerns. Remember that your interaction of processes should be unique to your organization as much as possible. Now, we actually have a separate webinar entitled The Interaction of Processes and Its Importance to a Successful Audit. If you are still working on developing an effective IOP, I highly recommend that you check that webinar out. I think you'll find it to be useful. It is the single best indicator that you understand the process approach and that you have your arms around what's going on with your quality management system. Another item that can prevent continuance to Stage 2 is inadequate process measurables or process performance data. Now, the standard requires an item called quality objectives, and this is certainly a big part of this. But the larger picture is that you are required to monitor, measure, and analyze your processes. So the expectation is that every process you've identified, in our example, we had six of them, should be monitored or measured, and there should be performance data available to show that you're doing this monitoring and measurement. Now, some standards have minimum requirements for the amount of data that must be available. Now, for most standards, including ISO 9001, you just have to have enough evidence to show that you are carrying out the monitoring. We don't have, for example, it doesn't have to be 6 months or 12 months or whatnot under ISO 9001. Just enough to show that you've implemented a means of measuring the processes. Now, some organizations, when they endeavor to set up their system, they choose to have just a few measures of effectiveness, just a few things that reflect on the system at large. That is absolutely acceptable if that's your strategy. If you're still working on this, again, you may want to reach out to a consultant or whatnot, but bear in mind you have to be able to show that you have process measures and related performance data. Another item that can prevent continuance to a stage one audit is if you have not performed your internal audit, or if the internal audit is entirely inadequate. So what do we mean by adequate internal audit records? Well, we're going to look to see that your internal audits are planned, that you are carrying out the audits in an effective manner, that there's notes to show that the auditors are out there gathering objective evidence, that nonconformities, if written, are being responded to, and that auditors aren't auditing their own work. Now, we get asked once in a while, do we have to have our internal audit done before the stage one audit? The short answer to that is no, but you do have to show that you have the internal audit scheduled, planned, such that it will take place prior to the stage two audit. So if you can show us that the internal audit has been planned, but not finished at stage one, we can still recommend for continuance to stage two. Now, the issue with that, and I emphasize this strenuously, if you go into a stage one audit with only a planned and not completed internal audit, you are losing the benefit of having a stage one auditor review that internal audit and provide comment on it. Because, as I mentioned earlier, there are no nonconformances issued in a stage one audit. It's your one and only free pass with this. For the rest of time that you're certified, every audit you go through will have nonconformances. So why wouldn't you take advantage of that? Let us look over your internal audit, and if there are loose ends, we can tell you about it during the stage one audit, and you can button up those loose ends prior to stage two. So please take my advice on that. Another item that can be a huge concern is if you've not done a good job with defining internal auditor competency. Now, we get asked this once in a while. Well, do we have to send all of our auditors to internal auditor training? Excuse me, sorry about that. And the short answer is no. You are required to define competency requirements for everything in your company. What does it mean to be competent to execute orders? What does it mean to be competent to pack a box? What does it mean to be competent to execute a purchase order? And internal auditing is just another activity, another competency within your system, no different than any of those other things. So whatever criteria you set, whether it's going to auditor school or doing a period of self-study, whatever is your path, we just need to verify that you have those things on the record, that you have trained your internal auditors or ensured their competency, and that those activities are on the record. Now, the last red flag issue is management review. And again, our expectations are that you've performed a management review with all the required inputs and outputs, and that the management review covers everything, and that it is productive. You know, sometimes we have organizations that do a great job of showing us what was discussed, but they don't get into the minutia of what were the outputs, what were the decisions and actions. You know, one good example of this is organizations that put PowerPoint slides together. PowerPoint slides are great. They're not mandatory, but they're great. Shows us in a nice condensed space, what was reviewed. But what it doesn't show us is what were the decisions what were the outputs? And that's critical as well. That's important to bear in mind. Now, again, and in much the same way as what we were talking about earlier with the internal audit, if we get to stage one and you've not conducted the management review yet, but you have planned it, you show us that it's planned and it will take place prior to stage two, you can be recommended to continue to stage two. But just like the internal audit, you are losing your one and only free pass opportunity to have management review looked at in the context of an official audit without a fear of a nonconformance being issued. So again, if you can have the internal audit and management review done before the stage one audit, that's going to be very beneficial to your system. Now, all conclusions that are issued within a stage one audit are subject to executive committee concurrence. All the stage one audits get reviewed by the executive committee to make sure that the decisions reached are appropriate and fair. So the auditor's say is not the final say. And if you have a stage one audit and you don't agree with the results, you absolutely have the right to file a dispute of any decision that was reached in a stage one audit. And that process is discussed in our Pro 10, which can be downloaded from our website. Now, if you have a stage one go not so well, and the recommendation is to repeat the stage one audit, we recommend that you work from the audit report to shore up the issues that were raised. And stay in contact. You can continue to reach out to your auditor or to the PGR Executive Committee to discuss your remediation actions and make sure that you're on the right path to a better result. Now, if the recommendation is to proceed to stage two, we recommend at the point that you are planning your stage one and stage two audits to have a buffer of at least 30 days between those two events. No matter how ready you think you are, it's ideal to have at least 30 days, if not 60 to 75 days. Now, remember, we do have a cancellation policy, and I've seen it more times than I care to admit, where organizations have wanted a back-to-back stage one, stage two audit, and it's ended up being a very bad idea. Use that time between stage one and stage two to go through the auditor's report and make sure that you are addressing any concerns of any kind that are raised. So in conclusion, we want our clients to feel confident and comfortable with the stage one audit process. We definitely want the care that's taken in the pre-stage one phase and the support that you're going to get from the auditor and the executive committee. We want this process to be as seamless as possible. If you're endeavoring to complete a stage one within the next few months, we do wish you every success in that process. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of my other webinars. We have ISO 9001:2015, Knowing What to Expect, on ensuring a stress-free audit. This is shown roughly twice a year. It's an exploration of fundamental issues inherent to certification, some of which go back all the way to when ISO 9001 was first published. Tries to kind of clear the air on what is expected. And then, as prior mentioned, our interaction of processes and its importance to a successful audit, also shown roughly twice a year. Very popular webinar, explores the crucial topic of processes and how to correctly understand them. We have webinars on a whole bunch of other topics. We'd love for you to join us. If you'd like to be kept informed of the latest news automatically, including upcoming webinars, the best way you can do that is to visit our website at www.pjr.com. Go to the bottom of the page, input your email address, and click subscribe. You will be opted in for those updates automatically. I do thank you for your time. I'm going to go ahead and unlock the question portion of the dashboard and see if we have any questions. Mayo Therine asks, what about calibration? Can we proceed with plan for both stage one and two? Well, Mayo, if you're asking, can calibration be incomplete for measurement devices that you're using on product prior at the stage one and stage two audit? The answer to that is no. Any devices that are you are using for inspection purposes need to be definitely calibrated at stage two. Calibration is not an item that typically gets any amount of attention at stage one. Any other questions today? Okay, thank you all for your time. Take care and be safe.